From the way the woman fixed her eyes on me as I entered the courtroom, I had a suspicion she'd been waiting. I paid her no mind at first, and instead went up to counsel's table, conveyed the information I'd promised, pulled the full report from my briefcase and handed it over, then turned back around to leave. She sat there, still staring, like this was church and one of the plaster saints had stepped down from its nave. As I came nearer, I smiled and nodded toward the hallway, suggesting she follow, then waited just outside. She slipped out the thick wood door as though afraid the slightest peep might bring the majesty of justice crumbling down. She was African-American, 30 or so, elegant hands but the eyes of a ghost, shapeless wool beret and corduroy coat, the single mom shoulder bag, the sensible shoes.
"Mr. Phelan?"
"Tierney," I said. A common mistake. I crafted the smile I've perfected from habit. Phelan's my first name. She nodded primly.
"I apologize."
"No, please, it's a silly name. Can I..."
"I'm Marshalene Whalen."
She glanced back and forth down the hallway, making sure no one stood too close.
"My brother is Raymond Kersey."
For the briefest moment, I entertained the notion that she didn't look like much of a cop killer's sister. Absurd thing to think. How was she supposed to look?
"Would it be possible, Mr. Tierney, if it's not an imposition, I mean?"
She swallowed a lump of air, fiddled with her purse strap.
"Might I have, maybe, just a moment of your time?"
In the month since that awkward first exchange, as I did what I could to help her and the brother she continues to love, not the majority view, I assure you, I've come to realize that my fleeting idiocy as she approached me that day, in fact, speaks to something largely unexamined and insidious. Call it the curse of assured expectation, the blithe confidence that life makes sense. We've seen it all before, or most of it anyway. And by golly, we've got this funny little world and its curious ways commendably sussed out. A neat little trick of the mind. And it grants us all kinds of permission. In particular, it sanctions that sneaky, contemptible thing we do dozens, even hundreds of times a day. Judge others. Just as that same dishonest logic allows them to judge us. But there in the courthouse corridor, after that initial mental glitch, the chief impression of Marshalene Whalen that came to my mind was that I doubted I'd ever encountered anyone fully clothed who seemed so naked. The bulkiness of her coat suggested she'd lost considerable weight. The angles of her face looked drawn and unnatural. Her eyes swelled with such a worn-out, fragile concern, they almost swallowed you whole, dragging you down into the directionless nowhere that now defined her life. She reached out, took my hand, as though the next thing she said required a bond between people she feared might be lost forever.
"Raymond, my brother, isn't the man they're all making him out to be."
Her voice was urgent, but not insisting. She seemed to lack the will for that.
"I need someone. Someone people will believe. Let them know what happened to him, how he changed, why he changed."
"Someone white," I thought, not unkindly. She was right, after all.
"His lawyers at the public defender's office recommended you. They said you had a special kind of concern for people who've used up all their chances."
An unsteady breath. She collected herself.
"Can you help me?"
So that's the word out there, I thought. I'm the new St. Jude. Judas, not Iscariot, in the discriminating words of John the Apostle. Patron saint of the unlucky break. In an earlier, less ambiguous era, the perfect role for Spencer Tracy, Pat O'Brien. I slid my hand inside her arm. "Let's find somewhere to talk, shall we?"